How many people just go sit at the table and lick the salt shaker?
Under the age of six, probably 50%.
That's true.
Maybe more.
But the point of salt is not that it makes salt taste good.
Speaking of going, you're listening to Speaking of Going, a podcast about life, friendship, our hope, and how Christ's love compels us to go to forgotten communities around the globe. And because we've experienced Christ's love, we cannot help but speak about what we have seen and heard.
Yeah, so the thought that we had this week is that Matthew 6:1, it says, "Beware of practicing your righteousness before men to be noticed by them. Otherwise, you have no reward with your Father who's in heaven." And then just in the chapter before that, there's a statement that says, "Let your light shine before men in such a way that they see your good works and glorify your Father who's in heaven." So there's maybe a sense in which on the surface, it looks like opposite statements. And we just thought we'd talk through that a little bit today. What's your pondering look like this week on the topic?
My pondering this week, I really focused in on the to be noticed by man. So basically, would God rather not have the good deed or good work done at all if the motive is to be noticed by man? That was kind of my prevailing question, the thing that kept coming up. What do you think?
So for me, there's kind of a underlying theological question that kept ringing in my head. And I'm not going to give you a very direct answer to your question, to your thought yet, but I think it gets there. But there's this question of light. And what is the relationship between light and sight? So do you see light?
Yes.
I don't know if you do.
Oh, it's a trick question. You see the source of light for sure. Gosh, what a dummy.
What do you see, actually? You're seeing photons, right?
Yeah, you see reflections.
But right now you're looking at the computer screen, and what do you see? You see Randy.
Yeah.
But I guess the thing I'm thinking in my mind is we don't ever say that we're seeing light. We see a coffee cup. We see Ben. Yeah. We see a tree. We see a man born blind. When the Bible talks about seeing things, it doesn't talk about seeing the light. It talks about an object that you see, and the light is the mechanism by which you see an object.
Yeah.
So I think when I've read this in the past and I've thought about it, it says, "Let your light shine before man in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who's in heaven." I don't think I ever really thought too clearly about what is the function of light. But the function of light is not to see light. The function of your eye is not to see light. The function of your eye is to see something that light bounces off of. So my thought is then the relationship between light and sight, well, light illuminates something else. And the thing that's illuminated is the thing that is seen. So in this, let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. So in this case, my work is light. My light is shining. I don't know. Here it gets a little hard for me. Jesus says he's the light of the world, right?
Yeah.
So he maybe would be my light. And his light shines off me to show the works of his Father. So now let's back up a verse. In verse 14, it says, "You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden, nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house." So of course, if you have a candle on a lampstand, you can see the light itself, but you don't put it on a lampstand for the sake of seeing the light, right? Nobody turns on the lights in their room because they want to see the light bulb.
That's right. Yeah, we want to see what it illuminates.
Right.
We don't want to see the source.
And so we're a light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. So it's somehow or another, in the past, maybe I thought God was illuminating me, and then I was, I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what to do with it, but my thought is that in this case, our light is shining to illuminate the works of God. Whereas in chapter 6, verse 1, it's beware of practicing your righteousness before men to be noticed by them.
Yeah.
So in that case, it's me that wants to be seen. That's my thought.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. So that's really helpful. So one is you that wants to be seen. The other is the works of God through you to be seen.
Right. That's what I'm thinking is, if my role is to be seen, that's bad.
Yeah.
If my role is to be the light that allows God to be seen, that's good.
Yeah.
Then I went back one more verse. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt becomes tasteless, how could it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown and trampled under the foot by men. So how many people just go sit at the table and lick the salt shaker?
Under the age of six, probably 50%.
That's true.
Maybe more, but...
But the point of salt is not that it makes salt taste good.
That's right.
It's that when it's combined with other flavors,
yeah,
it makes the other thing good. So again, salt is not showing off salt. If you taste something and you say, wow, that has a lot of salt, that's a bad thing.
That's right.
But if you taste something and it has salt in it and it makes it taste good, that's a good thing. So again, the goal of salt is not to be noticed as salt. The goal of salt is to make food amplify the good essence of the food. Anyway, yeah. So I kind of think that I've never really thought about it before, but these two side by side seem to me to highlight a similar principle.
That's really cool. I've never thought of that before.
So when we were living in Central Asia, mm-hmm. One of my wife's friends, she spent all kinds of time with her. My wife is salt and light. She makes everywhere she goes, beauty happens and love happens. That's just kind of the way she rolls.
It's true.
And I remember this devout Muslim family. The dad in the family was talking to his daughter, and I could understand their language. We'd lived there a little over a decade, so I had gotten to the point where I could converse pretty well. And I heard the dad telling his daughter that God has sent Robin to you.
Oh, wow.
You need to listen to her. I mean, it's just that somehow or another, the saltiness and the brightness of the light that Robin has to show the works of God in the things that she does can cause a devout Muslim to somehow know that God is at work and that his daughter needs to pay attention to this woman.
Mm. Wow, that's really good. I mean, a similar thing happened to me. Very good on you to mention your wife. I'm gonna talk about myself.
That's good. You're my hero too.
But I had this friend. We were friends we had been friends for probably 2 years, and we were traveling a lot together in the southern area of where we lived. And he's pretty devout Muslim, but I would call him a modern devout Muslim. So like, he really thinks he's a devout Muslim, but not necessarily in practice. Maybe a lot of that was due to the government restrictions and stuff. But yeah, we were in a room one time, and I felt like I wasn't getting anywhere with him for 2 years. Like, there have been a few times where he mentioned, you know, about what we believe, what he believes, what I believe, asking questions. And in general, he was just a really good guy. And then we were in a hotel room one night, And I'd actually, we were with several people from our church as well. So he had been around me. He had been around a lot of our friends. So maybe it wasn't just about me, but he said that you must love God more than anyone that I've ever met and anyone that I've ever seen. I was like, oh, why do you say that? And he went into comparing people who are really devout Muslims, leaders of mosques, imams. He went into great detail of all these people that he knew who were super good and super religious. And he said, but there's no way that they love God more than you do. And I was like, I don't know what I've done. I couldn't think of a specific instance. This was before, you know, I really got in deep with his life and his marriage. And there's all sorts of great stories, I think, that God used me in his life. But this was before all of that. And he felt and sensed that. I'll never forget that phrase. It was a big confidence booster, not necessarily in myself, but in what God does despite myself.
Trying to think in my mind, being a people pleaser, liking people to like me, liking people to admire me, especially my creativity. I really like it when people say, wow, Randy, that was really creative. You're really clever, Randy. Then it's kind of like, oh yeah, I really am, aren't I? There's a sense in which I crave admiration.
Yeah.
And so practice, it turns out also that God has gifted me in creativity. And so sometimes that creativity happens in a way that's just natural and builds other people up. And sometimes that creativity happens in a way that I want to be seen as building somebody else up. And somehow or another, people can tell the difference.
Yeah, that's it. I was going to ask you, how do you tell the difference between someone? Is it just internal? Like, is it just between you and God? Or can you actually see the difference between someone who is seeking and living to be noticed by man?
When I was in cross-cultural ministry, I developed an opinion that people could simply tell. And then I was reading a book called Anatomy of the Soul. And this book says, whether it's right or not, it could be argued, it's not Bible. But this book says that there's a mechanism of communication that does not travel along the lines of language. And so there's a right brain to right brain communication that's not rational, that communicates a lot of underlying things about your motives and your ideas. I've come to believe that it's true, that I need to get my heart right. And if I try to let my light shine to give the impression that I want God to be glorified when in truth I want the credit, the fact that I'm trying to give the impression that I want God to be glorified, somehow people just know. And so when I find myself in that place in my heart where I want the credit, then the only thing I can do is repent. And I can assure you that will happen in the next week. That I do return like a dog to my vomit in that regard. And thankfully, God's going to be faithful again this week to keep me believing in Jesus and to keep me repenting and growing. But for me, that's probably the area where I struggle the most, is wanting Christians to admire me, particularly for creativity or faithfulness. Mm-hmm. And needing to keep going back to, nope, that's not my motive.
So as I get older, what you're saying is I'm still going to also struggle with that. How old are you?
52.
52.
Yeah.
I'm 33. So it's not going away.
I mean, my evaluation would be that you're well along the maturing landscape from where I was at 33. So by the time you're 52,
I'll end up better than you.
I'm sure you won't have this problem when you're 52, but I do.
Yeah, surely.
Have you ever considered becoming a cross-cultural worker? Convinced that no one should live and die without hearing God's good news, we believe that He has called us to make disciples of the Lord Jesus Christ in communities where He is least known. Visit us at simusa.org/connect to talk to someone about serving in mission. This has been an SIM USA production.